Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and welcome everybody to Senate Finance today. It is 9:37 a.m. Wednesday, the 14th of April, 2010. With me today is Senator Hoffman, co-chair, Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas, Senator Egan. We have a full schedule today. We are scheduled to go morning and afternoon. There's been a couple of changes in the order of the bills. House Bill, we have 11 bills on the agenda. House Bill 168, Trauma Care Centers, that's going to be pulled from the agenda, taken up at a later date. That will not be up. First bill up today will be Senate Bill 312, Vessel Passenger Tax, and then we'll follow the order of the agenda. House Bill 114, Use State Transportation Facilities for Disaster Aid. House Bill 186, Alaska Firearms Exempt from Federal Regulation. House Bill 319, Firearms. House Bill 315, Public Accounting. Senate Concurrent Resolution 19, Legislative Task Force Higher Ed Scholarship. Senate Bill 309, Gas Exploration Development Credit. House Bill 365, Fish Processor Fees, Licenses and Records. House Bill 424, Geo Bond, Education Library Research Facilities. And we'll finish up with House Bill 280, Natural Gas Storage Tax Credit. So we're going to, again, set House Bill 168 aside, and we'll start with Senate Bill 312 by the Senate Finance Committee regarding vessel passenger tax. This is the second hearing on this bill. We heard it for the first time on the 5th of April. The intent today is to adopt a committee substitute, have my staff speak to the bill and look to the will of the committee. Senator Hoffman may have a motion to adopt committee substitute version S, as in Sam.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee adopt CS for Senate Bill 312 / S as a working document.
I'll object for explanation, and I'll have Mr. Miles Baker from my staff come forward and explain to us the contents of the CS.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Miles Baker, staff to Senate Finance Committee. Mr. Chairman, I thought what might be helpful is just to talk overall about what the CS changes are. It's a fairly short bill. I can go through section by section, but in essence, what the new CS does over the first version that was introduced by the committee, there are some title changes just to conform to the changes that we've made in the CS. Section 1 and 2 are unchanged. Section 3, which is 4352.220, has been added to the bill just in going through the section of statute. If you recall, this whole section was done by Citizens Initiative, and the original bill changed certain sections of the statute, but in looking at the head tax statutes in general, this section needed to be cleaned up a little bit because we've gotten away from the concept we've defined elsewhere in statute what we mean by the passenger that's traveling on a commercial vessel. So we've included in the new CS section 220 of statute in order to make those changes clear. Section 4, 4352.230A has been changed, Mr. Chairman, and basically what we've done there with section 4 and Section 5 and Section 6 that really deals with the original bill got rid of the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund. We haven't changed that. The other fund, the Commercial Passenger Vessel Tax Account, these three sections of the bill deal with that fund and what the fund can be used for. And the new CS basically makes it clear that the proceeds of the head tax go into the Commercial Passenger Vessel Tax Account. And then you see on page 3, line 3 and 4, the legislature may appropriate from this account for two purposes. The first purpose, which is in the next section, is to do the first five port of call. That's in Section B, Section 5 of the bill, starting on line 10, to make the first five port of call payments. And I will go through that section in detail, but just to continue the flow, the following section, Section 6, then lays out what the second purpose of the fund can be used for. And the mechanism really hasn't changed. The fund was always set up to make first five port of call payments, and then whatever the balance in the fund was, the legislature every year was appropriating through the capital budget. What we've done is just made it clear that the first five port of call payments, once they go to the communities, they have to be used for, and the language is slightly different than the first bill, but beginning on line 22 of page 3, you'll see that after the port of call payments are made, that those local municipalities shall use the funds for port facilities, harbor infrastructure, and other services provided to the commercial passenger vessels and the passengers on board those vessels. The next section, D, is the section that would address any balance that's left in the fund that then the legislature may appropriate. And you'll see that the language is relatively similar for the legislature's appropriation as well. And it begins on the bottom of page 3. The legislature may appropriate money from the commercial passenger tax account to projects that, one, improve port and harbor infrastructure, two, provide services to commercial passenger vessels and the passengers on board those vessels, and three, to improve the efficiency, safety and efficiency of the interstate and foreign commerce activities in which the vessels and the passengers on board those vessels are engaged. So the language has been changed slightly to clarify that this money is intended to be used for improvements to services provided to those vessels and their passengers, and the structure of the statute has been changed to make that clearer, that the money comes in and then the money can go out for two purposes. The statute, the way it exists now, had three purposes because the Regional Cruise Ship Fund was in there, and it was a little unclear in the way it was structured, and that has caused some confusion over the last 3 years, because even though parts of it said that it seemed like you had to use them for local port and harbor boats, shoreside services, there was also a little section in there that made it seem like the legislature could pretty much use it for any purposes they wanted. And I think that was part of the concern from the industry that brought the suit. Just continuing, and I can come back through, I do want to point out a couple other things on the port of call payments, but just to continue, Section 7 of the bill, Mr. Chairman, was also a new section added in for the same reason not a new section, but a section of existing statute that has been brought into this CS for cleanup for some of this, and it just deals with the Department of Revenue's responsibilities here, and we've added that part of their responsibility is subject to appropriation to distribute the payments, the five port of call payments. Section 8 of the bill deals with local levies. This is the next major change in this CS, Mr. Chairman. The original bill, in a sense, grandfathered in the communities that had already had a local head tax in place prior to the passage of the original Citizens Initiative. Those communities were, although they're not stated specifically in statute, were Ketchikan at a $7 tax, $7 per head, and Juneau had an $8 per head. The original bill proposed that if a vessel goes to one of those two ports, those local taxes are credited back out of the $34.50 that the passenger pays to come to Alaska. So in other words, the way the mechanism works now, when the passenger pays the $46, which is in current statute, and if they visit Ketchikan or Juneau as part of their itinerary, they pay that additional tax on top. The bill proposed by the governor, the bill introduced by the committee, would credit that $7 and or that $8 or both if the itinerary takes you to both those cities against the now reduced $34.50. The other element that was in the previous CS would have also allowed those two grandfathered communities to raise those local taxes between the two communities, raise them a total of a combined total of $2.25, establishing basically a grandfather floor, if you will, of half of the $34.50 that's the state head tax. So that's the it would be a $17.25 floor. That has been taken out of the current CS. So those communities will be grandfathered in. Those local taxes will be credited against the state tax, but they will not be allowed to raise those taxes, local taxes, and have it go against the state's tax. I believe the way this mechanism would work going forward, if any port of call decides to implement a local tax or raise a tax that already exists, those would be incremental to the $34.50 that's collected by the state. So that's what Section 8 does, is it takes away that floor. There's no changes in Section 9, which is the reporting, and there's no section in changes in Section 10. The other change is Section 12, the effective date. The previous CS had an immediate effective date. This CS takes effect October 31st of 2010, which is the end of this summer's cruise season. The Senate has passed a capital budget that included $26 million of additional spending of cruise ship head tax funds that were the anticipated revenues for this coming cruise season. Which is the FY11 fiscal year. So it also includes the budget we just passed includes the spending for the anticipated revenue for the May and June 2012 cruise season. In order to prevent passengers next year, if you come to Alaska May and June, you pay one tax. If you come in July, you pay a different tax. We've changed it so that the tax will stay in place. Collections are already being made right now on tickets sold. Anyway, those would have had to be refunded. We will keep it in place for the current season. It will change the next season, and we have another mechanism for making up the revenue difference for May and June of next year, which I can cover in a minute. So, Mr. Chairman, unless there's the one other, I guess, major change I don't want to forget on the port of call payments. The CS, and this is covered in Section 5, the way that the port of call payments would now work with the removal of the tax grant floor for Ketchikan and Juneau and having them grandfathered in at $7 and $8 if a vessel travels to those ports, by removing that, we have made those communities, if they are one of the first five ports of call, eligible for the revenue sharing payments as well. And those revenue sharing payments in this CS have been reduced from $5 to $4. The original port of call payments were $5 per community. If it's a municipality that's a combined city and borough, they get $5 currently. If it's a separate city and a separate borough, it's split $2.50 to each. In the current law, because Juneau is a unified city and they have an existing head tax, they have gotten they have never received any of that money. In Ketchikan, because they have two separate governments, the city of Ketchikan, which is where the ports are located and provides most of the services for the community, have not gotten any of those payments in the first 3 years of the program. The borough has gotten $2.50. Those are the basic changes in the CS, Mr. Chairman. I do have some spreadsheets that will help explain the math on this, but unless there are questions.
Is there any questions on the CS? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the explanation. It appears that the language has been tightened up to ensure that none of the reduced tax could be used for anything other than the five first ports of call. And I was curious if in Section 6, with the detailed listing of what the money can be expended for, if actually you can preclude the legislature from appropriating future money to other projects other than what are simply listed in a bill such as this. And then, first of all, I guess, if that's accurate, that it is tightened up to the point that the money cannot be used any place other than the first five ports of call.
Senator Thomas, through the chair, there are two sections that deal with the purpose. The Section 5, which is giving direction to the communities that make the port of call, that get the money from the port of call payments.
Right.
In that section, it says, subject to annual appropriation by the legislature, those port of call payments will be made. So the revenue sharing mechanism itself is still subject to the legislature making the appropriation. Assuming the legislature does make the appropriation, that section goes on to make, I would say it's pretty tight language in that section. And primarily it's tight because of the changing of the word on page 3, line 24. The language now says there are three types of expenses: port facilities, harbor infrastructures, and other services. But regardless of which of those three you spend the money on, they must be provided to the passenger vessel and the passengers on board. So the changing of the word from or to and pretty much keeps that money in those ports.
Correct.
because even if the passengers leave that port, the money has to be spent in servicing the vessel and the passenger. The second section that deals with this, the spending of the money, which is Section 6, which is the balance of the money that would be in the fund, which is also subject, it says the legislature may appropriate, is a little broader. It's not quite as strict. I mean, it's written, and perhaps, I don't know if Mr. Bullock's online, but it says that projects, the money can be spent on projects that improve port and harbor infrastructure. Doesn't really say where those ports and harbor infrastructure are. B, provide services to commercial passengers and the passengers on board those vessels. I mean, I'm sorry, two. I would say that section pretty much restricts it to the ports of call. Or improve safety and efficiency of interstate and foreign commerce activities on those vessels and passengers. So I think that section has a little more flexibility, if you will, but it's clearly the intent of the bill to keep these revenues as close to the ports of call as possible, while still giving the legislature its appropriation authority.
Follow up, Senator Thomas?
Yes. I agree. I think the short answer to my question is yes, that it restricts it pretty much to the five ports of call, and the only language that I see that has any flexibility at all, well, I don't actually see any, because it continues to revert to or discuss passengers on board those vessels throughout the entire Section 6. So anyhow, I just had a conversation with the Department of Law the other day, and they felt that still there would be an opportunity, but I don't see that opportunity existing any longer. So thank you for the explanation.
Other questions on the CS? Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Baker. We just got the CS, and I realize we have spreadsheets. Can you walk me through exactly what Juneau will get, what you're predicting Juneau would get?
Mr. Baker, if you could go ahead and help us.
Egan, through the chair, I'd be happy to do that.
And walk us through, I think, the current status.
And Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, it would be, you know, all the communities. I just want to... explanation on if the same would go for Ketchikan.
I understand the question. We'll have Mr. Baker walk through the allocation in the spreadsheets. There's two different columns, $4 and a $5 column, and the impacts.
Yeah.
Mr. Baker?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to give you estimates of what Juneau may get. I don't know exactly what Juneau will get, but I've prepared, there's two spreadsheets here. I guess I could have numbered them, but the one that up top says CS 312, it's port of call payment schedules. It's the busier of the two. What I've done here is these are the passenger port of call numbers from the Department of Revenue. The top half of the spreadsheet shows the communities. They're ranked in order of the three-year total. This program has been in effect for the 2000. It was in effect in the fiscal year of 06, but it's really cruise ship season 07, 08, and 09. So you'll see the three-year totals of those three seasons, and that's the number of passengers. So you see that Juneau is the number one port of call, and they've had 2.97 million passengers in those 3 years. And then it goes on to this. I would note, Mr. Chairman, the municipality of Anchorage which hasn't historically been a port. Last year they did have 173. You'll see that in the bottom of the 2009 column. My understanding is this year they may have 125,000 or so visitors. I don't know that exact number, but the industry may be able to testify to that. I did not project the Anchorage's possible traffic into these numbers, but you can simply take that 125,000 and multiply it by $5 or $4 as it is in the current CS, and that would give you what the expected revenue would be for the municipality of Anchorage. But on the far right column of that top section, what I did was take the Department of Revenue's forecasted passenger traffic. The expectation currently is that passenger traffic is going to drop by 85% over the 2009 levels. And so you'll see there in the 2010 column what a 15% reduction. I'm sorry, it's not an 85% reduction. It's a 15% reduction. And you'll see what that reduction represents and a year-to-year change from 2009. The second half, the bottom half of this, simply takes those passenger numbers and shows you what the community revenue sharing amounts have been to those ports of call. And they're in the same order as they are up top, and you will notice immediately that Juneau and the city of Ketchikan, which are the two largest visited ports, have gotten no money out of this $5 revenue sharing program. And they do collect a head tax, and have for years, but those are head taxes that have been worked out with the industry in advance. And I can't speak with great authority on Juneau's, but in Ketchikan's, that tax is secured to revenue bonds that have been issued to make port improvements in working in conjunction with the industry. So that $7, which passengers have been paying on top of the $46, is not available to those communities to make improvements or do other things with. While you will see that, and although the borough of Ketchikan did get its $2.05, you will see that Skagway, Sitka, Whittier, and on down the list over the three-year period have gotten a substantial amount of money to make port and harbor improvements through the $5 revenue sharing program. On the right side of this bottom section, what I've done there, Mr. Chairman, is show what the port of call payment amounts would be under the status quo using the 15% traffic reductions that are estimated by the Department of Revenue. I think the industry would testify that that 850,000 passenger number, I think their number is about 820,000, so it's a little bit lower. But the 15% reduction, I think, is a reasonable one. And you see what the status quo amounts would be. So, for example, Ketchikan Gateway Borough, number three on the list. Last year, they got $2.3 million in revenue sharing. If passenger traffic this year is what it's expected to be and we don't pass this bill, they would continue to get $1.9 million. If next column over, if this bill passes as it is currently in the current CS, they would be getting $4 instead of $5 for that same amount of reduced passenger traffic, which would be a difference for them this year of $393,000. On the next column over, if we were to keep the port of call payment at $5, which is what it is currently, but remove the restriction on Juneau and Ketchikan from getting those payments, you will see what the difference is there. And obviously, it shows that all the other communities were basically going to be held harmless and will get the same amount of money they would have gotten normally. But you will see that the city of Ketchikan and the city of Juneau would get, in the case of Juneau, $4.18 million to answer Senator Egan's question, and the city of Ketchikan would get $1.96 million. Those are the port of call payments. The next spreadsheet deals with the cash flow coming into the state, which doesn't change under this CS because we're not proposing to change the 3450. That still would be the head tax coming into the Department of Revenue. What the next spreadsheet does, Mr. Chairman, just in the top left corner, just kind of shows how the math of this works. The current excise tax is $46. The governor's proposal, it's currently split 25% into the regional cruise ship in-tax fund, which is $11.50, and then the other 75% goes into the commercial passenger vessel tax account for $34.50. That is the governor's proposal, which is why it's redlined, is to get rid of the regional cruise ship impact fund, and that is what the current CS proposes as well. You will see below that you have the two local taxes of Juneau and Ketchikan, and under the current bill, if a passenger goes to both of those towns, the amount of money available to the state to distribute out in port of call payments or to otherwise appropriate is $19.50 per passenger. If you use the same logic on the port of call payment, that if we're going to take an overall reduction in the amount of tax coming into the state of 25%, use the same logic that the port of call payments were to come down 25%. You see there that the port of call payments under that scenario would go to $3.75. We are proposing, because 375 is a little messy to split between the city and the borough, the CS proposes to bump that back to $4. And you'll also see on there, next to the available $19.50, I just put on there that the $17.25, if the local tax cap was capped at 50% as proposed in the original CS and the governor's bill, and a boat went to both those ports, and those ports took advantage of the 50% cap and raised their local tax up another $2.25, the amount available to the state would only be $17.25. And that portion has been taken out in our bill. And then what you have in the boxes below, Mr. Chairman, again, using the Department of Revenue's passenger traffic forecast for 2010, which is 850,000 passengers, the revised state excise tax amount at $34.50, working with the cruise line agencies and identifying the four, in essence, the four itineraries that are currently in place. I've tried to show here that with a $5 port of call payment, and I'm using the conservative number of five, our bill currently has four, but if you assumed it was still five as the port of call payments, and all five ports of call got them regardless of whether they had a local tax in place, what I'm trying to show here is that on itinerary one, which is three ports of call, which include Ketchikan and Juneau, 64% of the boats do that itinerary. So 64% of the passengers, of the total 850,000 passengers, well, that's 520,000. The excise tax they're going to pay is $19.50 because they're going to get credit for the Juneau and Ketchikan. That's going to be revenue to the state of $10,500,000. The port of call payments, to pay out those three ports of calls, there's not five in this itinerary, there's only three, would get $8 million, and it would leave a balance of 2.4. And using that same logic, you can walk right through the other scenarios. The four ports of call, including Juneau, three ports including Juneau, the 2% occurrence of seven ports of call, including Juneau and Ketchikan, in the first five. And you would see that at the end of the year, using a $5 port of call payment, that the balance in the commercial passenger vessel tax account available for the legislature to otherwise appropriate out on top of the five port of call payments is $4.28 million.
You have a follow-up question, Senator Egan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Baker, how much did the state get last year to dole out? You're projecting 4.2 or 4.3 if this takes effect.
Senator Egan, through the chair, last year in the 2009 cruise season, the state got roughly, you know, the head tax was $46. We roughly $41.2 million. 25% of that, or 10.3, went into the regional cruise ship fund, and 30.9 went into the commercial passenger vessel tax account. We paid out just over $10 million in port of call payments, which matches up here. If you'll see at the bottom of our port of call payments, $10,086,000, and we appropriated, the legislature appropriated an additional $54 million. The legislature and the governor appropriated $54 million in last year's capital budget. But we were able to do that, and we appropriated $500,000 out of the regional fund for Whittier Tunnel operations. But we were able to do that because we have had excess money. There has been really more money coming in than has been appropriated, and the balances have rolled forward. So I can tell you that we in the 09 capital budget cycle, we appropriated $15 million. In the 09 capital budget cycle, we appropriated the $54 million.
Senator Egan, we have available, we can get it to you after the meeting, we've got a spreadsheet that goes back to the beginning of this particular issue, shows the collections and shows the disbursements to the communities and the disbursements to projects.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
But Juneau's number is zero right now.
Just understand that. Mr. Chair, one
follow-up question?
So, Mr. Baker, this would preclude Sitka, just using these as an example, Sitka, Haines, Huna, from instituting a fee, to levy any fees.
I didn't understand the question.
Because Juneau and Ketchikan are grandfathered, no one else, Sitka, Haines, Skagway, Huna, would not be allowed to introduce some kind of a fee levy.
Senator Egan, through the chair, you might want to ask the Department of Law that question. My understanding is that there's nothing to preclude them from establishing a fee or raising a current fee. It would not be part of the settlement agreement,
okay,
and would be considered in addition to the $3,450. So that's something they'd have to decide on a local basis. and measure the impacts that might have on the traffic coming in.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just trying to figure out 2007 affected the other communities about the grandfathering. And one more, Mr. Chair, if I may. Is industry, I don't know if you've even seen this CS until now, but is industry going to continue their suit?
Well, I don't know. We haven't adopted the CS yet. We're
but I mean, I just, if this is adopted, I mean, it was the news release that came out was kind of nebulous as to what was going to happen. I'm just curious as to whether industry will in fact accept this as a compromise or continue the litigation that is currently going on.
This CS does not change the dollar amount of $34.50. And actually, I'd be surprised if there's opposition to this of any magnitude.
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Egan's question, although Mr. Binkley didn't see the exact CS, was yesterday, was aware of the changes we've made, and I believe Mr. Pogue from the Department of Law, if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, can talk about the effect of this on the settlement agreement. My understanding is that this does not change the $34.50. It just changes how the state decides to distribute the $34.50. This CS tightens up the language in terms of what the money can be used for in a way that I would assume the industry would be happier with.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Baker. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Senator Thomas.
Just one last question to try and make sure that I understand this thoroughly. After the money is divvied up between the five ports of call, what in your estimation would be available at all, if anything, for money available to the Denali Park, let's say, or the interior, where probably 25% to a third of the passengers arriving on cruise ships travel to?
Senator Thomas, through the chair, based in terms of the money available, assuming the legislature appropriates the first five port of call money or gives the department the authority to distribute that money, the money available to otherwise be spent based on the 2010 traffic projections, which is lower obviously than the traffic we had last year, is is about $4.3 million. In terms of what that money can be spent on or other than my previous comment, I don't know that I...
Sure, I understand that. I appreciate that, though. Thank you.
Okay, we have any other questions on the CS?
Yes.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, just a comment. Senator Thomas mentioned about all those people that go up to Denali. They come through Wasilla and Palmer. Which road they go on? Thank you.
That's true. Any other questions, concerns on the CS? Okay, I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. Any further objection to the adoption of the CS? Seeing none, we've adopted version S. There is one fiscal note from the Department of Revenue reflecting the annual loss of $22 million in cruise ship passenger receipts. There is one vessel one fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development for $10 million to conduct periodic reviews. We do have an amendment. Amendment number one, Senator Hoffman, could you move that?
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one.
I'll object for discussion. Mr. Baker, could you explain amendment number one, please?
Mr. Chairman, amendment number one, one of the other elements of the voter initiative, ballot initiative, it established a tax on gambling proceeds on board the vessel. But it put the gambling proceeds into the commercial vessel passenger tax account. But these tax proceeds are really just general fund proceeds, just like any other tax. And because the commercial passenger vessel tax account is really restricted on its use and will become, you know, even could argue more restrictive under this bill, this money has been kind of in limbo, if you will, in the account. We have not appropriated it the first year, and I believe you'd have to ask the Department of Revenue. I believe the first year it was $6.7 million and has been trending down a little bit since, but the first year that money just lapsed to the general fund at the end of the year. The next year in 2009, we did a reverse sweep. It was 6.3, and we're expected at the end of FY10 to collect another $5.7 million. So with the reverse sweep balance from last year plus that $5.7, there will be a little less than $12 million of gambling tax sitting in the commercial passenger vessel tax account that's really general fund revenue. So all this amendment does is stop having that money go into the commercial passenger vessel tax account and just be deposited in the general fund like any other tax would be.
Do we have any other questions on amendment number one? I'll go ahead and remove my objection to adoption amendment number one. Do we have further objection to adoption amendment number one? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and adopt amendment number one. We're back to the main bill. There has been some discussion. If I can reference the spreadsheet showing the ports of call calculations. Currently in the CS, we have a $4 port of call number, which then gives the communities currently receiving the port of call money a little bit of a haircut. If the committee so chooses to hold it revenue neutral to the communities, then we need to bump the port of call money to $5. Holding it at $4 leaves a little extra money in the pot at the end after the ports of call, so it's kind of a judgment call. I'd like to hear from some of the committee members on, you know, if they're so inclined to leave it at four and have a little bit of a haircut on the communities other than the city of Juneau and the city of Ketchikan, city and borough of Juneau, or if they want to bump it to five and hold it harmless. Question?
Mr. Chairman, if I could, just a quick comment. Just wanted to, going back to Senator Thomas's comment, the difference between the four and the five based on the 2010 traffic projections under the $4 port of call payment, the projection of the balance in the fund at the end of the year would be $7.1 million. Under a $5 port of call payment, it'd be $4.3 million. So it's about a $3 million difference. But I did want to make a point to Senator Thomas that the if you look at this spreadsheet, you'll see that the principal change in why the balance of the fund at the end of the year is not larger for the legislature to spend is not a product of the adjustments we're making to the port of call payments. For whether it's $4, $5, whether Ketchikan and Sitka are left, or Ketchikan and Juneau are left out, the impact of Ketchikan and Juneau being added under the $4 scenario with 2010 traffic is 3.2. Four. If you just add the two together, it's $4.8 million. Under the $5 scenario, the addition of those two communities is going to add 6.2. The loss to the Treasury is a result of lowering the tax from $46 to
$34.50. Any thoughts or comments on how the committee would like to see that structured?
Mr. Chairman, I don't really have a dog in the fight as far as the geography of representation. You know, I guess at this point in time, we're talking about the same amount of money. There is some appeal to having a pot of money where we can be able to address problems if that's the intent of $5 versus $4. You know, I would prefer that it not be an arm wrestling contest between communities about how we divide it up and it become a divisive issue. So the path of least resistance that people can sign up, I would be willing to support.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I've always been an advocate for local control, and if you have money at the local level, they have a better idea on how to go ahead and spend that. And so, but as was pointed out by Senator Huggins, I don't have a dog in this fight, but it's just my general idea that local control is always probably a better way to go.
So you're more inclined for the higher amount? Okay. Any other thoughts on this subject? Well, Senator Egan.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate lowering it to $4. However, I do appreciate that you did take into account the foresight that the City of Ketchikan and the City and Borough of Juneau had by working with the industry to implement this fee years ago. I guess I can go either way in the four or five. There are needs throughout other ports in Southeast Alaska, but we have to remember that these cruise ships are directly affecting our community's infrastructure, and to a great degree only the community's infrastructure. And we have a tremendous amount of dollars that our communities expend to upgrade our port facilities and pave our roads, create visitor centers for the tourists that are arriving in town, and it is a heavy burden. And but I, Mr. Chair, right now, I could go either way, but I of course would like the five.
Okay, we're going to stand at ease while we pass on an amendment. We're at ease. come back on the record, please. Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 2.
And I'll object for explanation. Mr. Baker, can you explain amendment number 2, please?
Mr. Chairman, amendment number 2 just replaces the two sections, the three sections of the bill that identify the amount of the port-of-call payments. That's page 3, section 5, line 15. Current CS says the port-of-call payment will be $5 for each passenger. The amendment changes, I'm sorry, 4, the amendment changes it to 5. And then on line 19 and line 20 of the same page, in the case of a ununified local government, it splits the $5 will now be to $2.50, and that brings the brings RCS back to what the current law is. The current amounts are for that revenue split.
Do we have any questions on the amendment? Senator Egan.
Just thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I'm going to support this amendment. I think it is unfair for communities like Haines, Skagway, Hoonah, Haines, and Sitka to be left out of the equation when there's a lot of infrastructure that those communities need as well, and they do not have imposed any fee levies, so I would support the 5.
Okay, thank you. Any other further objection on the amendment? I'll go ahead and remove my objection to amendment number 2. Any further objection to amendment number 2? Seeing none, we have adopted amendment number 2. Senator Hoffman.
Chairman, I move that on line 7, regarding the ports of call, that we delete 5 and insert 7.
And I think Senator Hoffman and
as a conceptual amendment
with corresponding numeric changes through the bill.
Yes.
Okay, we have a conceptual amendment, amendment number 3, to move the 5 ports of call to 7, and put that in the title and also throughout the bill. We have any objection to that? Any discussion on it? I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of amendment number 3. Any further objection to adoption of amendment number 3? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and adopt the conceptual amendment number 3. We're back to the bill. Any final comments, concerns? Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 312 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations, the bill as amended with the conceptual amendment number 3. With individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Do we have objection? You object, Senator Egan?
You object for a question?
Okay.
What?
Go ahead, Senator
Mr. Baker. Miles, what would happen? Can you give us a quick printout shortly on what would happen if we adopted or conceptually amendment 3?
Senator Egan, through the chair, I could provide that later. I can tell you that if you look on the spreadsheet that we have, the concern there, the current law, again, passed by the voter initiative, had the first 5 ports of call. I think at the time that was the outside range of the longer voyages. In reality, I think the average across the season was 3.4 ports of call. So that was another reason there was kind of more money in the treasury at the end, because we weren't hitting 5 ports of call and that payment wasn't made. Since in the last several years, there has been the addition of these longer routes, and on itinerary four, you see that it's a small percentage, only 2% are going on these seven port of call visits. So the effect of the amendment is to allow all those ports, the sixth and seventh port, to get a payment. And my understanding is we're talking about an incremental difference of about $100,000.
Senator Egan?
But it's still on average right now 3.4, correct?
I don't know what the current average is. My understanding it's right around there, 3.2, 3.4, but you'd have to probably get the industry folks to testify.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you remove your objection?
Yes.
Any further objection to moving the bill from committee? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee to the next committee referral. We'll stand at ease.
you're not a coastal
committee. We'll call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. We'll bring up House Bill 114 by Representative Ramos regarding the use of state facilities for disaster aid. This is the second hearing on this bill. We first heard the bill on April the 13th. The intent today is to bring it before the committee and ask for additional concerns and see what the desire of the committee is. Representative Ramos.
Mr. Chairman, it's a privilege to come before you and the committee again, perhaps for my last time as an elected state representative, Jay Ramos, District 10. Mr. Chairman, I felt we covered a lot of the material yesterday. I stand ready to answer any questions from the committee.
Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none, there are 4-0 fiscal notes from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, the Department of Transportation, Public Facilities, the Department of Fish and Game, and the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate CS for House Bill 114 be moved from committee with attached physical notes, individual comments.
Are there objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Representative Ramos. This moves us down to HB 186 by Representative Kelly regarding the exemption of firearms from federal regulations. This is the second hearing on this bill. We first heard the bill on April 13th. The intent today is to bring the bill back for the committee's consideration and see what the desires of the committee are. Do we have any questions, any presentation by the committee sponsor, Representative Kelly's office? Good morning. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Derek Miller, staff to Representative Kelly, and I too stand by ready to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from committee members? There is one indeterminate fiscal note from the Department of Law. Public testimony has been closed on this bill. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that CS for House Bill 186 be moved committee with attached physical notes and individual comments.
Are there objections to that motion? Seeing none, so ordered. We have the next bill before the committee is Firearms House 319 by Representative Hawker. This is the second hearing on the bill. We first heard this bill on April the 13th. The intent today is to bring it back before the committee for consideration. Is there anyone from Representative Hawker's office? Seeing none, do committee members have any questions that they might have that would set this bill aside? Seeing none, there are no concerns. There are 2-0 fiscal notes from the Department of Public Safety and from the Department of Law. Public testimony has been closed. Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that CS for House Bill number 319 be moved from committee with attached physical notes and individual comments.
Are there objections to that motion? Seeing none, so ordered. That brings us to the next piece of business, House Bill 315 by the House Labor and Commerce Committee regarding public accounting. This is the second hearing on the bill. We first heard the bill on April 13th. The intent is to bring the bill back for consideration of the committee and see what the desires of the committee are. We did have a pending amendment by Senator Egan. Senator Egan, are you interested in presenting that amendment today?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to submit amendment number one.
So you move the amendment. I'll object for discussion purposes. Can you present the amendment?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. There are just some minor cleanup of language. First change limits renewals for out-of-state permits to no more than 4 years. Current regulations allow two-year renewals, so the department has no objection to the tightening of it. Change number two inserts a missing shall, and it just corrects an omission. And then the third change also fixes an inadvertent error in trying to allow disciplinary action for an accountant who does something illegal both in outside and Alaska. The drafter accidentally took away the department's ability to enforce some violations of Alaska law.
Is there a representation from Representative Olson's office? Would you like to comment upon the amendment?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of committee. For the record, Jennifer Sinnett, staff to Representative Olson. The representative, the sponsor, is okay with all of these changes from the senator.
With that, I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Additional questions on the legislation? Seeing none, Senator Huggins. Wait, there's a new fiscal note from the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development reflecting the cost of hiring an executive secretary position at $134,200 in receipt-supported services. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate CS for House Bill number 315 with attached physical note as amended and individual comments be moved from committee.
Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. That brings us down to the last items before us, SCR 19.
And I'll take up Senate Concurrent Resolution 19 by the Rules Committee by request regarding the Legislative Task Force for Higher Education Scholarship. This is the first hearing on this resolution. The intent today is to hear from the sponsor, introduce the bill, take public testimony, and look to the will of the committee. We have representation from, we have Senator Stevens here. The Senate floor will not go forward as long as we keep this. President Perel, Finance. Senator Stevens, what do we have in front of us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're on the verge of one of the most momentous and important issues that has faced the legislature since I've been here in 10 years, and I believe that's the whole educational reform and looking at the whole scholarship issue and the governor's proposed plan. We've had various plans we've been looking at. Well, the truth is that we have found that 50% of our students going from high school to college need to have remedial education. Half of our students require remedial education. A general agreement, I think, among many professional educators that something's wrong with the educational system. Our students are not leaving high school with the basic reading, writing, and math skills they need to have to either enter into a post-secondary educational system or to go out into the workforce. Several other states have been working on educational reform, and we're at a point where we can make a choice, a very important choice, to remain at the end of the pack, or in fact to take steps to address these problems. Part of the problem, a major part of the problem, is financial aid. The tuition costs are increasing steadily. Financial assistance to students is a major incentive to get them to work harder and make an investment in our community, in our economy. The task force that will come of this piece of legislation, SCR 19, is intended to complement existing legislation regarding curriculum reform and post-secondary financial aid. It's also a contingency plan if that legislation fails to pass the legislature this session. The task force, the job of the task force will be to identify and recommend the best approach to improving our educational system with through financial assistance. I'd be pleased to answer any questions you may have or any specifics you may have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do we have any initial questions for the resolution sponsor? We have one fiscal note for $70,000 to cover the cost of travel for members of the task force. There's nobody online and nobody signed up in the room to testify. Any final questions, concerns for the bill or the resolution sponsor? Seeing none, Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Finance Committee pass out the Senate concurrent resolution 19 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
We have a motion to move the resolution from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Do we have objection? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move the resolution from committee to the next committee referral. That concludes this morning's session. We will, we're targeted to reconvene here for the afternoon session at 1:30, session at 1:30, meeting adjourned.